Welcome to It's All Journalism. I'm Jolie Lee. We have a special post-election show this week. Producer Mike O'Connell talks to a Danish journalist who was in town to observe the presidential election. We get her take on American politics. But first, I had the chance to spend election night at NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C. It was part of an event put on by NPR's social media desk and senior strategist Andy Carvin. Among the 30 participants were journalists, bloggers, activists, and all-around political wonks. One of the attendees had actually been there 4 years before, when the NPR social media desk held the event for the 2008 presidential election. Jill Miller-Zeiman is the Director of Partnerships with Civic Commons. It's a Knight Foundation grantee that's developing online engagement tools. She's also a city council member in Pepper Pike, Ohio. She told me about the biggest differences in following the election in 2008 versus 2012.
I think these days, you know, in 2012, what's different from 2008 is we have a lot more sources of information that we can consult at any time. The other thing I'll say is that, you know, in 2008, Facebook didn't exist. So that's a very interesting difference. And then the second thing is that people were really experimenting with Twitter and following voting irregularities on Twitter at that time. Now, there's a little bit less kind of electricity in the room here tonight, only because some of the tools that we've got now are more accepted and mainstream for all of us, whereas 4 years ago they were very new, so it was a little bit different.
So people were much more like palpably excited about Twitter back then, you'd say?
Right, and I think that because we didn't really know how it was going to work out, or whether it would work out, or whether people would follow it, or would they find it, would it matter, would it make a difference, would people care? And now, you know, one of the Twitter lists that I follow is populated almost entirely by mainstream media journalists back in Ohio who all have to have Twitter accounts, and they use them, and they use them really well. They do a great job with it. They're not against it at all. But 4 years ago, wouldn't have had it. I mean, the only people on a Twitter list would have been, you know, other friends of yours. You would not have mainstream media folks.
This expansion of social media, and particularly Twitter use, is happening on the activism front as well. I sat next to Juan Scalante, a recent graduate of Florida State University. He's an immigration activist and an undocumented immigrant. Scalante was following live streams, including NPR's Election Night page, and updating his Tumblr. He says social media has played a huge role in organizing people around immigration issues.
Back in 2007, and it really does, it sounds like an eternity from today, but when we first started, we had this fear about revealing who we are. I think you and I spoke about, you know, how open I am with my identity and who I am and how I identify myself as someone who doesn't have a legal status in this country. But you have to understand that in 2007, no one dared to do what I did today here in the room, and it was to announce that they were, in fact, undocumented immigrants. So we found comfort in social networks because it kind of gave individuals the security, pseudo-privacy that they were seeking. You could create an anonymous account, you could create a pen name, and that way you could still express yourself without revealing most of your identity. And for us, it was a very big push to kind of wean those people out of the currents of being anonymous to actually be open about who they are, what their efforts were, where they're living, so that we could create an actual network where we could work together, collaborate, and pass up down ideas down the ladder so that we could hopefully one day pass the DREAM Act or comprehensive immigration reform.
And even though Twitter use was pretty heavy that night, I actually found someone who admitted that he wasn't a big fan. Ben Cohen is founder and editor of The Daily Banter. It's a left-leaning political blog.
I'm suck at Twitter. I don't really get Twitter that much. It's got the app buttons and the hashtags, and it was a bit too... I got into it late and had to get shown how to do it, and I did like a day of it, and then it gave up.
It's just funny because you're at a social media event.
Yes. No, I know. I understand the concept of Twitter, but I'm not very good at it. Luckily, our blog, our site updates immediately to Twitter. So it looks like I'm on Twitter, but I'm not.
So we had a lot of Twitter updates and live blogs to keep us updated and to keep updated. And then I met Wendy McNaughton. She's an illustrator and graphic journalist. I asked her how she was covering election night.
With a pen, paper, paint, and the internet. meaning that I draw stuff from life, so I'm actually drawing what I see and everything going around that's happening at NPR headquarters during the elections. And I do that with a pen on a pad that I carry around, a 9x12 sketch pad. And then I come back and I use watercolor and I paint it. And then I take a photograph of it and I upload that to the internet.
You know, when you're walking into a scene like this, how do you decide what you're actually going to capture? Because it's impossible to do everything. What's going through your head when you just first walk into a situation?
That there's no way that I could possibly draw all of this.
Yeah,
yeah, there's no way. That's what goes into that's what I think. And also, it's I think what we first see when we walk into a busy room is busyness, and that doesn't really tell the story of busyness. I think what tells the story of busyness is like the number of pencils that have been broken, or the number of crumpled up paper that's on the floor, or in this case, the number of laptops that are open in the room. So I find like that tells a story more than actually just showing what's going on.
People in the room got really excited when they saw what Wendy was doing, and especially when they saw the final product. I asked her if this was typical of a response.
From people who spend a lot of time online, yes, because
it's an interesting point.
I think that so many people are spending so much time making and doing things in a digital space that when somebody pulls out like a pen and a paintbrush, it's almost shocking. Mm-hmm. People are surprised by it, and they say, "Wow, this is such a new idea." And I'm like, actually, it's been around for a lot longer than the laptop you're on.
That was Wendy McNaughton. She's an illustrator and graphic journalist. I spoke with her at NPR Social Media Desk Election Night event. And you can read more about her and the other people I talked to at itsalljournalism.com. And now we turn to producer Mike O'Connell's interview with a Danish journalist. What's the international view on American politics?
My name is Pia Røn. I work at the Danish Broadcasting Corporation. I host a morning show from 6 till 9 every morning.
Okay.
That's about it. We're the most listened to program in Denmark. We got like just about 750,000 listeners, and the Danish population is 5 million people. So it's a whole lot.
Now, I ran into you in the elevator in the building. You were going up to the WTOP, which is our sister station here in Washington, D.C., and you were going there to observe them as they're doing their election coverage. I'm recording this on November 6th, the day of the election. So tell me, what you're doing in town?
I'm observing and just making phone reports for my own show at home. I have been to the States so many times during election periods, but I have never been there for the real election. So I thought this time I'm going to go there and see what it's like on election night.
And what experiences have you had? I think you said that you went to a couple of the rallies that were...
Yeah, I went on Saturday. I went to the big Clinton-Obama rally, which was really, really interesting, because in Denmark, I don't think you could get so many people to go and watch the prime minister make a speech. And I'm sure you wouldn't have them waiting for hours in the cold. But people were just standing in line for 3-4 hours, being very quiet. That might be very usual to you, but that was very unusual to me and a couple of other Danes being there. And just waiting. I thought that was amazing.
What else have you done? Have you done any other
media? I've been talking to a lot of people. On Sunday, I also visited the Leadership Institute in Virginia, and we went to a very small rally in Fairfax, where the Romney boys were there, two of his sons were there. And it was funny to see the difference between this really big rally and this small rally where there would be, I think there were about 100 people, but it was in a parking lot, and it was all very cozy with cakes and warm coffee. But I've been impressed about the enthusiasm the voters have, all the volunteers you have here working. We don't have that in Denmark.
Are there any other obvious differences between the way our campaigns are run here than in the way they are in Denmark?
We don't have the TV ads. I know you're probably almost driven crazy by it by now, but we don't have that. Instead, we have a lot of signs in the roads, on all the light bulbs, all over the roads and all over the cities are signs, because we have a whole lot of candidates every time. So the town is just plastered with signs.
Oh, wow. So let's talk a little bit about journalism in your country. Now, you said that you're a broadcaster. You're on radio.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that that's a – well, why don't you explain how that's that's run. It's not a commercial station, as
we know.
No,
we don't have commercials at all. It's a little like if, you know, BBC and BBC One. My radio station is a little bit like BBC Run. So One. So people pay, like, it's not a tax, but it's kind of, we
like
call it,
fee.
A fee to listen to it. But everybody in Denmark does that because everybody can listen to it, either on the radio and watch the TV or on the internet. So it's run that way. And then we had a board where some politicians are in, but they're not allowed to have any. They can have an opinion, but they're not allowed to interfere with the programs.
So there's
so
no,
it's kind of it's really independent.
It's independent of the government. So there's not even though it's quote unquote government run, it's not the it's not a government mouthpiece.
Absolutely not.
Not at all. Now you mentioned that that you had a website. Now you have a website for the radio station. Is that pretty, how does that work with what you do as far as reporting the news and communicating with your audience?
Well, it goes on. It shifts every time a new show starts. So once you enter the main entrance for the corporation, you can always see which program is on and pictures from the studio with a webcam, and then people can comment. And we put, of course, all our most important stories out there, pictures, and like right now there's a picture of me with a tag Romney which I had taken the other day, and then people can comment on it. We use Facebook, we use not Twitter really that much, but also we have interaction with the listeners during the program through text messages.
So
we always have one computer open, each of us, with only text messages. So the listeners write into us. In our show, we don't talk to the listeners.
Mm-hmm.
They do that in a whole lot of other programs. But the listeners can write to us, and they do that all the time, saying, that was really a stupid question, or did you ever think about, and, you know, stuff like that. And that's, so we interact with them in that way.
It's really interesting you were saying about Twitter, because, now, is it that Twitter is not a huge deal in Denmark, or is it just something that's not part of your show?
It's not part of our show,
okay.
But it is becoming
mm-hmm.
bigger.
But you do use text, which is sort of an instantaneous, sort of similar type thing, where you know, you're able to create that dialogue with your listeners.
Oh, yeah, we do that. And sometimes we have the dialogue off air. Sometimes we take it into the interviews, like we have a listener asking blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time it's also off air. So,
how do you now, what is your Facebook page? Is that just sort of you know, highlights of what the shows are? Is there much engagement with your listeners there?
It's both highlights and communication. And like on every Friday, my show is with news and there's some news, there's some music, there's some fun stuff. So on every Friday, we ask the listeners. Actually, we don't ask them anymore because they know. But every Friday, we have like we say, What's the mood like in Denmark today?
Mm-hmm.
So people can write in, they can send pictures and just tell us, how are you doing? What's it like to be in Denmark today? So on every Friday, there's a whole lot of interaction going on because everybody sent their pictures in of what they're doing and
mm-hmm.
how their breakfast look, how the kids look this morning and so on.
All the important stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, we were talking before that journalism in the United States, we've been sort of going through this upheaval for the last, you know, 5-10 years. The internet came in and, you know, the downturn in our economy, and a lot of newspapers are closing or cutting down staffs or cutting frequency of publication. So journalism is in the middle of an evolution at this point. Is something similar going like that in your country and in Europe?
I think pretty similar, yeah. Maybe you're a little bit ahead of us. Probably you are, as usual. But yes, that's going on as well. The papers, they're losing people buying them. There's not so many people buying papers anymore. So yeah.
Are you seeing a greater shift maybe of people to getting their news off of the internet?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And especially the young people. They would never buy a paper.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So now how long have you been a broadcaster?
For 25 years.
So you've been around long enough to sort of see this change. You know, what does this make you think about? Are you concerned about what's going to happen in the next, you know, 5-10 years?
I'm concerned if all the journalism will be like very fast stories, pushing fast stories about big titties all the time, or whether whether there's time enough for some people to sit down and actually make investigative reporting. That's what concerns me most. But on the other hand, I just think that we have to rethink the way we make news and try to you know, what do you call it, take up the competition or,
Well, yeah. I would imagine you being a government-funded organization, do you have like sort of a mandate where you need to dedicate a certain amount of time to like investigative reporting and, and things like that, or is it very loose?
No, but we have our demand is we have this public service thing that we have to cover, which means that, for example, my show, we always talk about what is important here, and because we broadcast to the young listeners from 20 to 40 years, we get a whole lot of people that don't go to the Danish Broadcasting Corporation in any other way. So we talk about we have to make it nice enough for them to listen to, but also tell them stuff they wouldn't.
They wouldn't pursue.
Exactly.
They wouldn't seek out.
Yeah, so that's part of our public service
So then are you seeing, you know, you were talking before about the younger listeners and, you know, that they're not reading a newspaper or something like that, then does that mean that you're changing the way that you're delivering the news to try to reach a younger audience or to try to...
Yeah, we do, but I think it's not because, you know, it sounds like, oh, they're stupid, they don't read newspapers.
Right, right.
They're not, because they just get all the stuff on the internet. So they really know so much more than when I was young. But yes, we have to focus on how to make it fast. So all our interviews are like 3 or 4 minutes. Sometimes it's annoying because you want to talk for 6 minutes. But, you know, we just know that if we should keep them listening, then it's 3 or 4 minutes and then we play some music.
It's the, you're fighting the attention span.
Yeah, but then another thing is you just have to tell yourself, well, it's better than they have 3 minutes news than nothing.
That's true. That's true. So let's sort of wrap up here. What are you going to be doing the rest of your time that you're here in Washington, D.C.?
I am on the lookout for a big election party tonight. I'm going to go and interview some of the voters and talk to them about why they're here. I understand you have long lines for voting because we don't have that in Denmark. People just go and vote on the schools, and it takes about 5 or 10 minutes.
Well, I know locally they had people waiting about an hour when the polls opened.
Which is impressive, I think, that they actually stand there waiting and will go and vote.
You know, people,
so I'm going to go and talk to your voters and hopefully find an election party.
So the other thing that you mentioned before was that you're going to get a call tonight at about 1 a.m. from your show.
Yeah.
And what are they going to want to know?
They want to know who won. And I can say, I don't know. And then they just want to know what it's like, what are people saying around me? What were the voters saying when I talked to them today?
Mm-hmm.
What did I do at the radio station? Probably they'll ask about that. So, I've been on air in Denmark talking about the rallies I went to and
Have you got any feedback from that, either from your colleagues or from any of the people?
They thought
it
was refreshing. That's what they said. I thought I was very tired. Yeah.
Well, it must be nice for them at least to have you here as a representative of them, sort of giving them the first-hand experience.
There's also a lot of news people from the Broadcasting Corporation here. Actually, they're making live news, television news from Washington, D.C. Tonight in Denmark and also tomorrow, I think. So, but it's just another angle I can give, so.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming in and talking.
Thank you.
This is really, really fascinating.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And, well, you know, I hope you have a good rest of the time here that you're in our country.
I'm sure I will.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a special post-election podcast of It's All Journalism. For more podcasts, go to itsalljournalism.com.